Have you ever noticed how much great photography there is online? I mean, not counting all the stupid YouTube videos and those ubiquitous cats and corgis. I'm talking about the amazing photographs, pictures of galaxies being born in deep space, rare images of animals in the wild, strange and beautiful photographs of people and places, the kind of images that make you stop and look again and then click share. Photography is an art form that can make you see the world differently. Today's digital platforms and social media are fueling a photography renaissance. I'm Anne Strainchamps, and my guest this morning is a young curator and internet evangelist at the forefront of today's online photo culture, Andy Adams. Born and raised here in Wisconsin, lives in Madison, has built an international reputation as the creator of Flack Photo and the Flack Photo Network. It's an online photography channel and community that's pioneering new ways to share and celebrate the art of the photograph. And Andy, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. So let's start by talking about Flack Photo, your baby, your creation. What is Flack Photo?
That's a good question. You know, the definition has kind of changed, I think, over the years as my interests have changed. But essentially, it's a website for promoting photography, promoting people that make images, promoting people that make photography books, and celebrating the act of looking at images.
Well, one of the things you've started doing is creating online exhibitions,
right?
Which is, and I've heard you talk about how the digital media and the online world has really created all kinds of new ways for us to see photography.
Right. Well, yeah. So, you know, the exhibitions that I've been doing are exclusively digital. What I mean by that is that they live really everywhere and nowhere at the same time. They are exclusively online. And, you know, a big part of what I think about here is how the internet browser has become a kind of exhibition space now that we have these high speeds on the internet and we've got, you know, large monitor resolutions and photography just looks great on those screens. The other big opportunity, of course, is that now anyone that has access to the internet is a potential audience member, a potential spectator for an online photography experience. And that opens up whole new possibilities for, you know, showing photography to people.
Well, it's sort of like making a gallery or making a museum portable, you know, so that if you've got a smartphone in your pocket, you've got a gallery in your pocket.
Yeah, specifically, you know, touchscreen tablets are even better than mobile phones. Of course, the phone is still the small real estate, but as touchscreen tablets get more sophisticated, the resolution gets bigger and bigger. And the thing that's been really interesting for me is I've started to think about how website experiences, when viewed on a touchscreen tablet, behaviorally aren't significantly different than looking at a photography book. And by that,
no,
I mean,
you're turning pages in the same way you would if you had a big coffee table book.
Yeah, and unlike a traditional print exhibition where you are in a big open room, you're probably in your home and you're in an intimate space. And so you have this opportunity to really look at things slowly and really pay attention.
And the photographs are so much more beautiful because they're backlit.
Right.
On a screen, they just glow.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, some photographers have had hang-ups about that. But since I come from a background of studying cinema, it makes perfect sense for me to want to see images backlit with illumination. And they look brilliant on the screen.
But there must be others who think, wait, what happened to the beautiful matte paper? And I didn't intend this to glow.
Well, that's an interesting point, though, is that that point of intention, right? I mean, because what I've seen is a guy that has been really not only contributing to the photography community, but actively observing it and watching how it's evolving. You're seeing photographers doing things that, you know, that actually leverage both the best aspects of both platforms. People still making prints and books, but very much, you know, doing things with applications and podcasts and videos and all those things that live exclusively on the screen.
So tell me about some of the online exhibitions you've created. There was one about landscape photography that you kind of began with.
Yeah, so that's a project called Looking at the Land, and I did this last summer with the Rhode Island School of Design Museum of Art. And the premise was simple, really. We were looking to talk about contemporary landscape photography, pictures that had been made in the last 10 years, and to consider the question of whether or not landscape photography was evolving in the 21st century. And so what I did, which is, you know, really kind of part and parcel of how I always work, is I put a call for submissions out on the internet, out on the website, and, you know, the floodgates open, pictures come flowing across the transom, and that became this very interesting opportunity to sort of, you know, crowdsource the possibilities for how this form might be changing. And what we ended up then doing was showing a projection at the RISD Museum in Providence, but then also making a quite a robust website that features not only the images, but short form interviews with each of these 88 photographers.
So you can wind up with so much more online than you would in just a museum. So the new one, I want to talk about the new exhibition you've done. This is Making Pictures of People, mm-hmm. and you partnered with the Nelson Atkins Art Museum, which is in Kansas, I think.
Kansas City, Missouri.
Kansas City, Missouri. Mm-hmm. I always forget there's a Kansas City, Kansas, and a Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah, there's probably local rivalry there along the state line, so you probably got to keep it.
Right. But this is portrait photography.
Correct.
So who are the, how many submissions did you wind up with?
More than 10,000 image submissions. Yeah, this is the wonderful thing about using the web to source images is that there is literally an endless abundance, and the supply goes on forever. Of course, that the dark side of that other, you know, is that you've got to look at all those things. But there's just tons and tons of fascinating pictures being made out there.
Well, let's talk about some of them. And for those of you who are listening, if you're near a computer, you can follow along and look at the pictures that we're talking about. We've got a slideshow up on our website, which is wpr.org/45north. You can also go to our Facebook page, which is 45 North on WPR, and you can watch the photo gallery as we talk about the photos.
Great.
So what are some of your favorites? There are, some that really grabbed me. Yolanda Del Amo does this series, their archipelago, and their portraits, like the first one I think you've got up there is a woman playing the piano mm-hmm. in a room, mm-hmm. looks like just an ordinary middle-class room, and you assume her husband is sitting at a table next to her. He's looking away from her. She's only looking at the piano. And there's so much distance between them, even though they're sitting just feet from each other. Tell me about that one.
You know, I guess that's one way to look at it. These are really fascinating pictures. I mean, they are photographs, to be sure. And they're in a documentary style, but they definitely mimic painting, I think. You know, I'm a big fan of the painter Edward Hopper, and I think a lot of these pictures look very much like some of Edward Hopper's paintings, and they're certainly as moody as the Hopper paintings as well. What Archipelago really is about is, exploring the relationship dynamics between people that share spaces. I think your interpretation is an interesting one because, you know, the best photographs, of course, aren't completely straightforward.
That's a very nice way of saying I got it wrong.
No, okay. Not at all. No, that's a nice way of saying that's one way to see it. And I think that Yolanda actually would be happy to hear that there's a difference of opinion about what some of these things mean.
How do you see it?
Well, I think that depending on the day, I'm going to see it the way, depending when you ask me, mm-hmm. I might see it the way that you see it. But look at it this way. You know, you spend your life with your partner. You live in the home together. One of the joys of that relationship is knowing that you don't always have to fill the silence with chatter, right? Being able to live in a space together and each do your own thing and maybe still feel a connection.
Oh, that's lovely. So it's a portrait of an older couple in a small room, so comfortable with each other that she's playing the piano, he's just sitting, maybe listening.
Yeah, maybe he likes the music that she plays. He's reading, I think, in that image. And yeah, I think that the tensions between people, and I think that there probably are, you know, things you can read into pictures like this about the way that we are maybe not as connected as we once used to be. But I think another, one of the things that really works nicely about Yolanda's pictures is that the portraits themselves are just the surface of a whole kind of inquiry that you can have about your own situation. And I think, you know, one of the reasons that I picked these images to show is because not only are they beautiful, but you know, they make you, if you spend time to look at them, they really give you an opportunity to think about yourself, the people you care about, maybe someone that you live with, and the way that you relate to them.
If you are by any chance looking at the photos right now, and again, you can look at the photos along with us while we talk about them, so it's like an online gallery experience. Our website is wpr.org/45north, and there's a photo slideshow up there right now. You can also see the photos on our Facebook page, which is 45 North on WPR. And if you've got a reaction to any of the photos, something you want to tell us about that you notice in them, give us a call. It's 1-800-642-1234. Too many numbers and names to give out. They get jumbled in my head.
I was just thinking, this is cool that we're talking about these pictures on the radio when people have this opportunity to go look at this thing in real time. Because in addition to the website gallery, the whole Making Pictures of People project lives on the web like a public art project of sorts. You can see it at blackphoto.com/MPP. So, I want to encourage readers to go, or listeners to go there as well.
Yes.
I mean, one of the reasons that we did this exhibition the way that we did was because, and the museum very much supports this idea of wanting to be able to bring, you know, photographic experiences out into the world. To, you know, there's a certain experience that is important, you know, going into a museum and making the time to go there. But obviously you're limited by who can do that. And so one of the wonderful things about these projects something that very much inspires me to want to keep doing things like this is that you can just access it whenever you want to. So the idea of someone hearing us on the radio and then being able to just cue it up is actually a wonderful and unexpected outcome.
Yeah, it's funny. I hadn't even thought about it before we started talking, and I suddenly realized, well, as long as we're suggesting that people go and look at the photographs, why not say, well, then call? It's a virtual gallery experience that we can all share together. So give out the URL for the online exhibition again.
It's flakphoto.com/MPP, and that's FLAK photo.com/MPP.
Okay, so if you have access to a computer, go on over, check out some of the photographs, and then call, ask a question about one of them, tell us your reaction to one of the photos. What's your favorite? Or what's something that you found unforgettable? So we should talk about some of the others. There's,
yeah.
Jason DeFlorio's photos of the village elders.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us, those are amazing.
Jason Florio, you know, I should also say this, that most of these photographers I haven't had the luxury of meeting in person because I live in Wisconsin and, you know, the major photography centers aren't here in the Middle West. But Jason, I've actually had the luxury of meeting, and he's just a charming, charming fellow. This project is called Silafondo. And what it is, it's a series of portraits of Gambian alcalos, village chiefs and elders, that he made when he and his partner were traveling around the Gambia on foot. And you know,
on foot.
Yeah, I know. He's a real 21st century adventurer, like Shackleton might have been, although you know, in Africa rather than Antarctica, which is another really fascinating part of this project is that, you know, this photographer isn't having people come to his studio. He's going out into the world and, you know, bringing cultures back with him in the way that the great traveler photographers have always done.
Yeah, so this is photographer as explorer. And again, one of the amazing things about photography online, I think, is the immediacy with which you can see photos from far corners of the planet, places that you will probably never go yourself.
Yeah, you know, and I agree with you. Definitely photographer as explorer, but also photographer as kind of documentarist, because in addition to going out and seeing the world and bringing his unique perspective to it, he's British, so he's going to bring that, you know, that point of view to the way that he sees things. But one of the things that's really fascinating about these pictures, and just to talk about them a little bit, they are all very similar. They're a kind of typology of sorts in that each image is constructed in a very traditional portrait composition. And you've got these village elders. These are the people that essentially lead their community. They're the people who the community, I think, kind of looks to for guidance. And it's this long, long old tradition in these communities in Africa. And what he does is he goes, this is kind of an interesting part of the story, is that the series is called Silafondo. And one of the things he talks about in the interview on the portrait's website is how Silafondo refers to this tradition of gift giving when you're a visitor in a community. And so he and his partner, you know, they're traveling from community to community. And of course, they have to communicate to these chiefs, can we make your picture, and here's who we are, and so forth. And then what they do is they would give gifts of these kola nuts that were these local nuts that, you know, these foods from the area, and you know, make these pictures. And so the pictures become a, you know, simultaneously a document of this moment that they shared with these people, and then they also become this window onto the world, because you know, every one of these images is very regal, you know, kind of stately, dignified.
Their faces are so beautiful. I mean, these are older people. You can see the accumulated years of wisdom somehow. And it's not like they're looking at you and smiling. They're looking often very somberly straight at you sometimes. And it's hard to interpret that gaze.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a feeling of accusation, distance.
Maybe.
Or maybe not. Maybe simply pride and
self-containment. I imagine pride is a part of it. But, you know, one of the things that I've wondered with these pictures is, you know, in the West anyways, our instinct is to smile whenever a camera's put in front of us. That's just this thing that we do. We don't even think twice about it. And that's one of the things
weird. Why do you think we do that?
Well, I grew up late 20th century America, and that's just the way that, you know, the word cheese was this word that I knew that I was supposed to say when a camera was put in my face.
It's interesting. Do you ever look at old historical photos? You know, if you've got any that go way back in your family, right? And I guess people had to pose for a long time. They're all so somber.
Right.
So it's partly strange looking back at the really old photos of great-great-grandparents that you maybe never knew, and you think, did they have a good time? They all look so unhappy.
I think part of the reason that, well, we know for a fact that part of the reason that people weren't smiling in the past is because photographic processes weren't as quick as they are. Image capture just took longer.
Right. It's a little hard to hold a smile for, you know, however long it
Right.
What would it have been? A minute? 2 minutes?
Yeah, probably a minute. Yeah, and in fact, another one of the photographers in the portrait show is Kelly Anderson Staley, who's actually making contemporary portraits using this tintype process, an antique process, actually. But this is kind of interesting, too. I trawl Twitter every day and so to feed my photography habit. And on occasion, I'll just search on hashtag photographers, see kind of what comes up, you know, what kinds of serendipitous things happen when you find that. And I actually saw just yesterday a dentist office posted something on their page about photography that said before the word cheese was the word that we used to, you know, instigate a smile in a picture, photographers used to say prunes to sort of get people to
keep
their lips. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know if that's actually true, but I thought, well, that's fascinating.
That creates a very different kind of face.
Yeah,
doesn't
it does, doesn't it? And I suppose it's a whole generation of people that part of what it is, I think, is just an instinctive response to the camera. You know, which is a whole other conversation, actually.
Right. Well, that does come up in the whole question about making pictures of people. Right. We're talking with Andy Adams. He's the creator and curator of Flack Photo, which is an online photography channel and community. We're talking in part about his new online exhibition, Making Pictures of People. You can see it online in a bunch of places. Andy, what's the URL for your site again?
The URL is flackphoto.com/MPP.
Okay, you can also see a slideshow on our website, which is wpr.org/45north. And do you have questions or comments about some of the photographs that you've seen? Or another question I wanted to throw out, in the world of images that streams past us every day, is there a photograph you've seen or shared recently that made you stop and slow down and look more closely? A photograph you couldn't forget? Call and tell us about it. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. We're talking with Andy Adams. He's the creator and curator of Flack Photo, an online photography channel and community. We're talking about, in part, about his new online exhibition, Making Pictures of People. Andy, let's just quickly talk about a couple of the other photographers, the things that really grabbed me. Molly Landreth has this series, Embodiment, Portrait of Being Queer in America. There's some amazing pictures there. What do you know about Molly?
Well, Molly's another one of these photographers that I met through the internet years ago now, kind of through the online blog scene. And in fact, the way that I learned about her was through this blog that she was publishing while she was traveling around the country with a I think it was with a videographer at the time. And the whole idea of the project, Embodiment, is to, you know, I guess make a series of images that reflect contemporary queer culture in, you know, a positive way, which seems like an obvious, simple thing. But the truth is that the mainstream media hasn't always, obviously, traditionally depicted these people this way. And so, you know, Molly's project has been as much about connecting with the community that she's part of as it is, you know, putting their voices out there and showing who they are in a very dignified fashion.
So the first photograph, Travis, he's at a gay skate park in Glendale, California. Had no idea.
Who knew? Yeah, who knew such things existed, right?
Right. And he's got, the place looks... Well, you described the photo. What do you see in it?
It's actually one of my favorite pictures from the Flack Photo collection. It's a very simple composition, horizontal, beautiful interior, wonderfully lit. Molly's got this fantastic sense of color. She really, really knows how to make everything work in arrangement with everything else in a picture. And our sitter, Travis, is just centrally situated in the middle of the picture, kind of hunched over on his knees. He's got those 1970s era brown skates on that have those little orange nubs on the toes to stop yourself. I remember those from my childhood, which is one of the reasons I think that picture connects with me so much. And he's just looking at you quietly.
Yeah. It's a lovely photo. There's one other person I wanted to mention because I love this project. Richard Rinaldi, who has this project. He gets two strangers together and somehow he works with them. He gets them to touch in ways that strangers are not usually comfortable touching. So the first picture you see is this maybe middle-aged to young black woman and a much older white woman, and they're hugging. And at first I thought, oh, that's nice. They must be friends or relatives or something. And then I read the description, thought, my God, they're strangers.
Yeah.
How did he do that?
This is one of the great things about a picture, I think, is when it confounds your expectations. You know, you look at a photograph, you think you've got it figured out. And then you learn a little bit more about it and you realize that's not at all what I thought it was about. You know, a big part of the Making Pictures of People exhibition is the interviews, because something that I'm always interested in addition to looking at photographs is really understanding the image makers who are producing these pictures, learning who they are, learning why they do what they do, the things that influence them and inspire them. And Richard's project is really fascinating and has really, really struck a chord. He's actually got a book of this work coming out, I think, next year with Aperture Foundation out of New York. But this is really fascinating because essentially what he does, the project's called Touching Strangers. Simple as that. And essentially what he does is he asks complete strangers to physically interact while they pose together for a portrait. And that sounds, I think, pretty obvious and simple. But when you really consider what that must be like in the moment, it sounds like it's quite challenging. I mean, Richard has talked all about how he, you know, sure, he has to be a photographer and make the picture, but he views himself as a kind of director, because what he needs to do is coach people to break outside of their comfort zone. One of the things he talks about in our interview is how he, when he asks people to touch each other, there are these two instinctive poses they always do. They put their arm around the other, or they hold hands. And I think that, you know, that maybe is this kind of safe space that we that we instinctively feel we can do with someone that we don't know. And Richard's very interested in, you know, pushing that even further and creating a, you know, spontaneous, fleeting relationship that's more charged than that.
And so what does he do after the first thing they do is maybe put an arm around each other? And does he then say, can you get a little closer?
I would imagine that's the case. You know, I haven't actually watched him work. I have. I think Richard's a very sensitive person. I think he must have a great way with people, because you can tell by looking in the eyes of these subjects that they really trust him. You know, they really feel like they're safe in front of the camera. And I think that that, you know, on the whole topic of portraiture, that's, I think, a pretty big deal, right? Because the whole act of making a portrait is, and a lot of these photographers say this in their interviews, is they view it as a collaboration between them and the subject. And, you know, they're not just there to take something from the subject. They're actually there to get, to give something to the subject. And I think...
What do you mean? What do they give? What are you giving when you take somebody's picture?
Well, I think that a lot... I would argue that probably all the photographers that are in this particular show, they give something of themselves, because these are all very personal projects. One of the things that was important for me in assembling this lineup of 27 photographers was that each of these projects would be, you know, robust portfolios of serial work, which is to say work that's been going on over the course of a number of years, not just singular pictures, but, you know, bodies of work that are, that have maybe been evolving over time. And as a result of that being the case, of course, every one of these projects is very deeply personal for each of these image makers. And I, you know, I think that I have to assume that they just bring that intention and that, and that part of the experience to them. You know, they're really connecting with their subjects, not just as, you know, a sitter to be photographed, but as a person that they want to have a connection with.
Well, one of the pictures, one of Richard's that I love, is shows a young man, and I forgot what this one is called. Wait, I have it written. Well, I don't know, don't remember the names, but there's a young man. He's just standing on a street, and he's holding in his arms, he's picked up this young girl, and he looks like maybe he's Hispanic. She's white and blonde. She looks like maybe she's 8, 9 or something. He's maybe 20. And you just, they're strangers. And I mean, they've never met before, and somehow they've suddenly, through the process of taking this picture, created enough of a connection that he could feel comfortable and she would feel comfortable just picking her up in his arms.
Yeah, Richard has said, you know, he says this in our interview, and I've seen him say it elsewhere, that he really, and this is one of the things that's interesting, is that, you know, one scenario would be a photographer coming to document a relationship between the people that are sitting in front of the camera. What he's actually doing is creating a previously non-existent relationship. He's making something new happen, and then he's capturing it and sharing it with all of us
in that moment. So, Andy, we're talking about photography as an art, and the people we're talking about are artists, and this is their medium. How does this connect then with the fact that in this day and age, we're all photographers, right? We all carry these little cameras in our pockets and we snap pictures constantly. To a certain extent, I mean, I think more and more people take pictures much more frequently, and we use them to communicate in ways that we never did before. I mean, do you think about the, I don't know, the distance between these two different photographic cultures? I don't know, high and low, maybe.
I guess I'd prefer not to call them high and low. Mm-hmm. I think that there's room for everything to coexist. And if there's one thing that I think is true about this particular moment in photography, before the show, we were talking about whether this is a golden age in photography. And, you know, you get all kinds of responses to that question. But one of the things that I think is particularly exciting about this moment is everything is converging, you know, to use the words high and low or popular and, you know, high art, whatever. The internet is providing this place where it all just lives and coexists. And, you know, increasingly it's, you know, when you're browsing photography in your Facebook newsfeed, everything's smashed together. I think it really changes the way that you think about what a photographic experience is. For, you know, in the history of photography, for a long time, image makers really fought to have photography recognized as an art form. And I think at this point, we all agree that, yes, photography is an art form. But, and I'm interested in that, you know, specifically when I do these exhibitions with museums. But what I actually think is even more interesting, and maybe what really represents the current era that we live in, is that photography is this real communication tool. I mean, actually, we call it photography, but the truth is most of these things that we're making on our phones, they're not true photographs, right? They're photographic images. Mm. They're digital images that are being produced by a, you know, very cheap sensor. And if you want, you know, the purists out there, and I know you're out there, some people are incensed by what's happened on the web. But, you know, a photograph is an object, and a photograph is actually light, you know, harnessing light to fix an image on a physical surface. And, you know, I think that tradition is going to still survive because plenty of people think it should last, and therefore it will. But what increasingly most of us are doing, people that don't even call themselves photographers, we're just making pictures. You know, we're just using images, all of them produced by way of, in most cases, a mobile phone, a digital camera that we carry with us everywhere. And what we're doing, though, is we're really communicating in visual terms.
Well, sure. I mean, think. It's, you want to tell somebody about the great meal you just had. You could write up a description, but how much easier and how much more potent in some ways to just snap a picture and post it on Facebook. Or you want to tell somebody how cute and amazing your three-year-old is right now and how much she loves her new dress. Well, you could describe it or you could just snap a picture and post it online.
Yeah, and then once you throw the social media ecosystem in there, you know, the way that we, every one of us, there are the holdouts and they are the proudest people that I know that don't use Facebook, right? There's this small contingent and shrinking that doesn't use it still. But increasingly, you know, most of us are using Facebook every day to connect with the people we care about, to learn about the things that we're interested in, to find out about what's happening in the world. And photography continues to play a greater and greater role inside of that social media news feed.
Well, sure. Haven't you noticed how, I mean, I just think in the years since I've been on Facebook, more and more what people are sending me is, or posting, is photos.
Right.
Not, it used to be links to text.
Yeah, and Facebook is very much adapting to that behavior and continuing to design the product that they, you know, present to the public to really be anchored around images. One of the things that I also think is really interesting is that the taking of the picture, that's actually not the end of the experience. In this social media environment that we're all in, you know, with that example you talked about earlier about making a meal, and I do that. Actually, many of us do that. For some reason, we can't help but photograph the food that we're sitting in front of at a restaurant. I embarrass my wife every time I'm at a restaurant because I always want to photograph it. But, you know, the thing is, on the internet now, a photograph is actually just the starting point for a conversation about it or the ideas it represents. And then in a way, you know, the photograph becomes this social object, and it becomes, you know, it kickstarts a social experience with people that you may or may not even know in real life on account of the way that the internet connects us all. This networked culture, right, that's just global. And that's a whole other really, really interesting thing about the role that photography is playing in the culture, just as a, you know, as a tool for connecting people.
Yeah, partly because a picture can communicate a whole lot really quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, you might need a lot of words to describe that meal, and the way you use your words would let some people in and maybe alienate some other people. Maybe you'd sound like a really highbrow foodie, but the picture, everybody can relate to.
Yeah, and the best part about it when it comes to something like a Facebook comment conversation or, you know, blog comments is that everyone has an opportunity to say what they think. And lots of times, some really exciting new things come out of those conversations. I do this on my Facebook page all the time. I ask questions, I post pictures, because I know that there's this, you know, audience of people that are as nuts about photography as I am that are out there, many of whom have all kinds of experiences that I've never had, know all kinds of things about images that I don't know. It's a great way to learn about this thing, this thing that we all are so passionate about.
So we put that question out there. Do you think we're living in a golden age of photography? Let me put it out there to you. If you are listening, do you have thoughts about, are we living in a golden age of photography? You can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email. The address is talk@wpr.org. There's a downside to all this too, though, Andy. One thing I worry about is, are pictures beginning to replace words? Are we becoming a less verbally articulate culture?
Wow. Well, I guess I'm not sure if that's true. That could be. The people that I engage with on the internet are certainly verbose in the written word in their comments. You mentioned the Flag Photo Network, which is this Facebook group that I host. And, it's awesome because you've just got people from all around the world sharing their ideas and their experiences every day. I actually think that all of this stuff coming together gives us new ways to be creative and new ways to express ourselves. I suppose it's a give and take, right? I mean, technology always changes humankind. You know, we adapt to the tools and they change us and all that.
Well, speaking of that Flack Photo Network, I know a kind of bit of a debate broke out recently. You posed a question about something, I didn't even know this word, selfie.
Yeah, the selfie.
Yeah. What's a selfie?
So I've been thinking a lot about portraiture on account of the Making Pictures of People show, and you know, not only thinking about quote unquote fine art portraiture, but just the role of portraiture, what it means, how we use the camera to express ourselves by way of making self portraiture. And so what you've got is this whole phenomenon now that's kind of popped up on the internet and in social media, you know, and it's the convergence of social media, the effortlessness with which we can communicate and publish on the internet, and then the fact that all of us are carrying this small little handheld phone that we can easily hold in one hand. And so the selfie is this image where you take the camera and, you either reverse it if you need to or not if you don't, and you take a picture of yourself. And, you know, the question then is, why you do that? And so I asked this question just the other day on my Facebook page. I found that I thought, well, this might be kind of an interesting opportunity for an exhibition, like an exhibition of selfies. This is a very popular form, right? Nothing you'd expect to see in an art environment. And yet, in the history of photography, it's fascinating. It's something that hasn't existed before. And increasingly, we all know what it is. And so if it's a cultural touchstone like that, that everyone knows what it is such that they have an opinion, it means it struck a chord in some way. The question that I asked is, why do so many photographers hate the word selfie?
Because, oh, they do?
Yeah, lots of photographers don't like it. And
how come?
Well, I think a lot of them, I think, that, again, like we were just discussing, there's this real convergence of high and low culture, I suppose, if that's how we should describe it. This idea that self-portraiture is very much an intentional, slow act. There's some artful thinking, some creativity.
Whereas a selfie is some stupid drunk guy snaps a picture of himself on a bar stool.
Yeah, sure. Or maybe it's just a teenage girl taking a picture of herself for her Facebook page. The idea is that it's maybe artless. One of the things that I thought was an interesting outcome of that Facebook conversation was that someone likened it to the snapshot, which is this other thing that exists in the realm of photography that we all just take for granted now. And in a way, the selfie is a kind of snapshot. It's effortless. It's throwaway. It doesn't actually need to be seen anywhere outside of the context of which it was made. Yet there is still a kind of personal expression. When I was in Kansas City last week, lecturing at the museum, one of the things that I did was visited with art students at the Kansas City Art Institute. I was talking with these students about how they use the internet in their work, how they think about photography, how the web has changed the way that they do what they do. And the selfie conversation came up in there. One of the things I thought was really fascinating about that was, first off, all these students knew what I was talking about. And they all do it. And it was the first time where I realized, oh, I'm old now. You know, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But one of the things I thought was fascinating was that this young artist was saying, yeah, the pictures that get the best responses on my blog are the selfies, the pictures of me. And therefore, I want to make more pictures of those. And that's this whole other conversation about the way that photography reinforces a sense of self and identity. And I'm still working through all those ideas. But that's really interesting thing. Photography becomes this, you know, way not only to say something that we're thinking or feeling, but it's a way for us to connect with other people. And, you know, that human connection is something that has long preceded the internet.
I want to take a call now. We've got Adam on the line from Oshkosh. Hi, Adam. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. Thank you for having this episode. This is excellent. I work here at UW Oshkosh and have a conversation with students all the time about how you can have meaningful, in-depth conversations using whatever medium. And I think the comment before about the high and low art being brought to everyone's accessibility to everyone is excellent. I just love the idea of photography being that medium and being able to share those in-depth important things in ways that people often think, oh, this is a throwaway or not as significant because they made it. Because everyone can make it.
What do you teach?
I actually was an academic advisor here on campus.
Okay. I was just curious, because you said you work with students. Do you notice that students are using photography much more than they used to?
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, because, like you said, everyone has it with them all the time, and the phone or a digital camera, or they're even getting the more quality images now because it's so much more accessible.
Right.
And that allows much greater sharing of what their vision of an idea is, what they're trying to show.
Thank you so much for the call. So I was thinking, Andy, you were talking about the snapshot as, and I was thinking, well, this is the way art develops though, right? Often we start with a new medium. Remember when Polaroids came out?
Sure. I don't officially, but...
Okay, I'm a lot older than you are. I remember when Polaroids first appeared. It was like, wow!
No, they were magical.
You push the button and the picture just comes out. But nobody thought of that as art or anything that you could do anything artful with. It was just for taking a fast photo. But, you know, fast forward all these years later, artists are trying to find Polaroid cameras and art has been created using those. I mean... So we've developed kind of a language and a way of seeing that particular medium. What can you do with a photo that comes right out of the camera? How can you use the advantages of that, which has a kind of immediacy?
You know, the Polaroid conversation is an interesting one. And one of the things that is still significant about a Polaroid versus a digital image is that a Polaroid produces an object. A Polaroid produces a physical thing. And, you know, there's something... I don't quite know what the word is. Magical is not right, but there is this aura of something surrounding the thingness of photography that many, many people are... I've seen this a lot. There's been lots of anxiety about that disappearing in the wake of all this internet culture that's exploded in the last decade. And, I still think that, you know, if anything, photographers now, with all these digital tools at their disposal, are still, you know, really fascinated with making things that are physical. And I guess at the end, an art experience is about a person trying to express themselves in a deliberate fashion, right? Trying to just say something. And, you know, if a snapshot can do that, or a selfie can do that, or something that a previous generation thought was low culture trash, but it still finds a way to resonate with someone, then it's a meaningful experience.
So one thing we haven't talked about is looking. Well, we've talked around it, but I mean, one downside, I suppose one criticism you could make of the fact that we live in a world in which we all see thousands of images a day.
Right.
I mean, just, you know, you spend 3 hours sitting in front of a computer and I have no idea how many images you've seen in the course of those 3 hours. And I wonder if we're, because we see so many, are we not bringing a certain quality of attention to images that maybe we used to? Is there a cheapening of the image?
I think that's absolutely true. You know, the abundance of images in the culture is the cause for a lot of hysteria from the photography community, certainly. But I still maintain that's not an inherent flaw of the internet as a form. That's user error. That's our fault, right? It's our fault. And the best example, and this I'm speaking as a person that looks at photography every day. I love it. I look at it every day on the internet, in books, you know, all the time. Before I was as committed to doing what I do with photography, I was an audiophile, collected music. And similarly, my music habits have changed radically since the internet kind of came in and changed it. And I very much connect differently to the music that I consume. And I have to be very deliberate and thoughtful about saying, I'm going to listen to this record. I'm going to really pay attention. And I think the same is so with images. I think that it will be very easy just to let that stream just flow over you if you don't pay attention. And that's fine on occasion. You know, photography, the other whole part of this conversation, I think, is that the web has made photography a kind of popular entertainment in a way that maybe it never has been before as well. And just like the television, you can zone and channel surf and not pay close attention. But I do think that, you know, if we force ourselves to take our time and really say that slow looking is important, we won't lose track of the meaningful photographic experiences that are out there.
So when you slow down and try to really, can you leave us with parting words of advice? How do you, if you're not used to looking at and thinking about photography, what do you pay attention to in an image when you slow down?
Well, of course, the images that I'm going to be drawn to are going to be different than those that you're drawn to. I don't actually know that it's the content of a picture that makes me slow down. And I do think that if you could approach an internet photo experience like you would a book experience, where you're not just skimming that, you know, the headlines of a newspaper, but really, really investing yourself in the experience, looking at all corners of the frame, really thinking about the things that the pictures are about. And you know, one of the miraculous parts about the Google era is that if you see something interesting, you can Google that person to learn more about them. I say, you know, leverage the best aspects of the web to teach yourself more about the things that you want to know.
Andy, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you here.
Thanks for having me.
Andy Adams is the creator and curator of FLAC Photo, an online photography channel and community that's pioneering new ways to celebrate and share contemporary photography. His most recent online exhibition is Making Pictures of People, a partnership with the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. To see some of the photos we've been talking about, visit our website, wpr.org/45north, or our Facebook page, 45 North on WPR. In both places, we'll link you to Andy's website. Don't forget to friend us while you're on Facebook. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll meet one of the photographers who's exhibited on FLAC Photo. I'm Ann Strange Champs, and this is Wisconsin Public Radio. Some photographers specialize in inviting us to look at things that we don't think we want to see, like death. Photographer Sarah Sudoff has made art out of disease, hospitals, funeral homes, and her own battle with cervical cancer. Recently, she took a series of very beautiful, almost abstract photographs of blood spatter and other matter removed from death scenes. It's a collection called At the Hour of Our Death. Sarah, do you have a favorite photograph from At the Hour of Our Death?
Yes. It's called Suicide with Gun, Female, 60 Years Old. It's actually a portion of a mattress bisected down the middle. There's stains all over it, but there's particularly some red splotches, and the mattress has now turned yellow from the stain of urine.
It's beautiful, as are all your photographs, but, well, I guess it's disturbing that they're beautiful. They're beautiful and dark at the same time. Is that what you're aiming to do?
I think with this series, I'm very interested in getting under your skin a little bit, to raise questions in your mind, to make you curious, to make you possibly step back for a second. The few times that I have exhibited the work, if I can choose to, I don't often put the text or the title next to the piece. I just have the photograph up, so it's a little bit ambiguous as to what it is, drawing you in, the saturated color, the abstractness. Ideally, the prints are 30 by 40 inches. So the fragment or swatch that I'm photographing is very much enlarged from its actual size.
So you're not just looking at a photograph of a bloodstain. It's a gigantic, enlarged bloodstain.
Yes, it's about the size of me. I'm just over 5 feet tall, so it's close to my size and scale. And most of the material is quite small, a throw pillow or a portion of a mattress, like I said before, or a bed sheet. And then I'm using a macro lens and going in really tight and detailed on just a small section.
What does it feel like to be handling that stuff? I mean, what's your attitude while you're doing it? You're, you know, touching and photographing the cellular remains of someone who died violently. A lot of people would find that terribly disturbing.
It is, and the camera provides a nice shield or provides a nice distance between you and what you're photographing. You can sort of hide behind it. But after a year of working on this project, it started to affect me a lot more. Initially, curiosity just took over. And then the longer that I've sat with it, the more that I've thought about it and talked about the work, it is a bit disturbing.
Do you feel, I don't know, a sense of reverence? Is there a way in which when you're handling some of these objects, they feel like sacred objects?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I am conscious that it is the cellular residue of someone. I don't know who this person is. I don't know anything more about them than, you know, possibly how they died. But I do feel that I need to be respectful. That's just a personal thing to me, that I'm being as careful as I can be.
I'm just thinking that so often in our culture, you know, we like to pretend that death doesn't happen or that it mm-hmm. can be tidy. And here you are asking us to confront, beautifully maybe, but still to confront death. What kind of reactions do you get from people who see your work?
It runs the whole gamut. A lot of people are moved by the work. I get a lot of people who think I'm exploiting the people who have died. For the most part, the responses have been very positive. People may find them beautiful in their abstract quality and not want to engage any further with the work. And then other people who do want to enter in and have a dialogue about death and dying and traces. We have a great conversation.
Why do you think this interest has stayed with you for so long?
I'm not sure. I have a few ideas. I come from a military family, and my father went to the Gulf War. When he came back, he showed me videos of what he saw and what it was like to be on the ground there. And, you know, whether or not a 13-year-old should see that, I was definitely exposed to it. I knew about war. I knew about how fragile our bodies were, coupled with the fact that I wanted to be a doctor when I was younger. With my experience with cervical cancer, that sort of interest in the medical realm with illness, with mortality, sort of opened back up and came back to the front.
What does your family think of your work?
My mother would like me to take pictures of dogs and cats and, you know, sunsets. I think my dad understands my work better than my mother. They both are appreciative and they're both supportive, but it is a challenge.
You have a new baby.
I do.
When he's old enough to see your work for the first time, what do you think you'll say to him about it? How will you explain it?
I guess the easiest way to talk about it is when I was an undergraduate, I attended a lecture by photojournalists, and they were talking about the role of the photographer and the role of the camera. They said that photographers are like flashlights. They bring light to the darkness. I've loved that idea of revealing something to the world that other people would rather not look at or possibly have looked over. So I guess I would tell my son that the projects that I work on are issues that most people wouldn't want to look at or think about, but that I feel are relevant and important to share with the world. I feel like I have a duty.
I'm curious, has there ever been a photo you've taken that's just been too much, too powerful, too raw?
My older project, Repository, when I was photographing in the hospital, I had never had access to a hospital like this before, and so was photographing anything. Yeah, I was very curious. And one day in the histology lab, the technician that I was working with mentioned that amputation had just occurred, and he pulled the leg out for me to look at. Of course, I was curious and wanted to look, and I photographed it. And even though that I know the person lived because the leg had been removed, they had diabetes and there was gangrene, looking at that detached leg was so disturbing. Aesthetically, it was beautiful. I shot it on this cutting board that they use in the histology lab that under the fluorescent lights turned green. The skin was moist. There was purple and red, and then the white of the bone sticking out of the leg. It was beautiful and very haunting, and one of the only things that I've ever photographed that made me cry.
Sarah Sudoff is a photographer, and we've been talking about her collection, In the Hour of Our Death. If you'd like to see some of the photographs, visit our Facebook page. It's 45 North on WPR. I'm Ann Strange Jemson. You're listening to 45 North on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and there's more coming up after the news. One of the most important art exhibitions of the year opens this weekend in Madison, the Wisconsin Triennial. We'll be talking with three prominent Wisconsin artists in the exhibit, so stay with us. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you.